and welcome to Ryan Talks Tax, a podcast to keep you up to date on the latest developments in Canadian tax and government funding. I'm Jim Day. In today's episode, we're joined by Clyde Seymour, principal and leader of Ryan's international income tax practice in Canada. And he's here to talk about some important changes to the mandatory disclosure rules for Canadian income tax purposes. Hi, Clyde. Welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me.
That's always our pleasure. The legislation for these new rules just received royal assent in late June, I think June 22nd. So that's essentially the effective date. So these new rules are in effect. And they include a lot of enhancements to the mandatory disclosure rules that were in place previously. It looks like these rules have been in the works for quite some time. I remember they announced them, I think, as part of the 2021 federal budget. What would you say is the driving force behind these rule changes?
Well, I mean, I think that really the primary driving force, especially with how complex transactions have become, is that, you know, finance, and more specifically their collection arm, the Canada Revenue Agency, doesn't know what they don't know. So basically they want disclosure. And really what the areas that we'll be talking about in terms of mandatory disclosure brings to the forefront, you know, various aspects of tax transactions to provide information to the Canada Revenue Agency to otherwise then be able to assess in advance of otherwise undertaking an audit.
And these types of rules are fairly consistent, I think, with other jurisdictions that have similar tax systems to Canada. Is that true?
Yeah, if anything, you know, we probably were a little behind the eight ball, given what the U.S. goes through and the increase in disclosure required to the IRS, you know, from a U.S. perspective. So Canada's playing catch up to a certain degree. And I suspect over time, you know, the outreach here may even extend further because it will make it easier for the Canada Revenue Agency to assess complicated transactions and transactions that, you know, specifically we're seeking a certain type of tax benefit.
Okay. The new rules create, different categories of transactions. So there's reportable transactions, notifiable transactions, and something called uncertain tax treatments. Let's talk a little bit about the differences and how the rules work for each. The first category under these new mandatory disclosure rules is reportable transactions. Now, I know previously some rules were already in place for these types of transactions. What's really changed?
Well, really what's changed here, again, from a disclosure perspective, is that the category of reportable transactions is really trying to target areas that, you know, could fall under the general anti-avoidance rule, GAR, under 245(2) of the Income Tax Act, right? And, you know, GAR, you know, there's, you know, multiple articles written on GAR, what is a GARable transaction, et cetera, so forth. But the Canada, the finance, specifically with this legislation, has tried to put certain parameters around what might be a GAR transaction that they would want to evaluate, right? And they've done this by creating levels of pillars, right? And they're saying that, you know, these certain pillars exist, and maybe the particular transaction is something that we want to look at that might be GAR. And the three pillars that they set was the existence of a contingency fee. So a provider coming and saying, let's go through this tax plan for the Income Tax Act, and we'll only, you know, bill you on a success on a contingency. Second pillar, that particular promoter or provider is saying, not only am I going to invoice you under a contingency fee, but I am going to impose a level of confidentiality that restricts the particular taxpayer from disclosing what these plans are. And third, could otherwise provide some level of contractual protection to the taxpayer should there be a level of reassessment. So finance is coming at it saying, if you've got one of these three pillars, then we want to know, all right? It doesn't mean that because these pillars are in place that your transaction is GARable. It doesn't mean that your transaction doesn't otherwise fit within the confines of the Income Tax Act and is otherwise 100% legal. It simply means that finance, specifically Canada Revenue Agency, wants to know about it so that way they can consider it sooner rather than late.
So it sounds like they're maybe lowering the bar a little bit on what might be an avoidance transaction, kind of casting a wider net in terms of gathering information about these, potential aggressive tax planning schemes. Is that your take?
Yeah, for sure. All right. I mean, the point about the bar being lowered, specifically even in regard to the application of this new rule or newer rule, is that it was reduced to one of three pillars versus two of three pillars in regards to making it a reportable transaction. Okay, so certainly that bar is lowered with regards to, you know, compelling a particular taxpayer of making a disclosure.
Yeah, and I know there's a lot of confusion out there, I guess, about you call them pillars, or I think sometimes they refer to them as generic hallmarks of an avoidance transaction, one being the existence of a contingency-free arrangement. And I know these rules are actually only for income tax. It's important to clarify that. I know, for example, in Ryan, we do a lot of sales tax recovery work on a contingency basis, and that doesn't, trigger these mandatory disclosure rules. But what does? What type of arrangement would trigger the rules?
Yeah, so I think you've made some good points. One is that these rules apply under the Income Tax Act, not the Excise Tax Act, right? Two, from what I mentioned before, the existence of a contingency arrangement doesn't make a transaction garrable, right? It can make it reportable, right? So on that basis, really, what is the CRA targeting here? Right. And what they were targeting, or what is being targeted, is, levels of tax, tax restructuring, if I can put it that way, right, to otherwise try to obtain a tax benefit under a contingency arrangement, assuming that's the pillar that the first level of pillar that the person trips over in terms of it being reportable. Again, the reason being that, if there is a level of restructure, and to the extent that restructure involves a level of a tax benefit, if it's a tax plan, presumably you are entering that tax plan because it's going to get you a lower amount of tax versus a higher amount of tax. So, what specific types of transactions is the CRA targeting here? They did not disclose that. No, but given that there is a multitude of transactions through promoters along this basis, again, the Canada Revenue Agency now has the ability to know about it in advance to otherwise evaluate. But as a general rule, because I think where you're going with this, Jim, is that these are obviously very broad. What is a tax benefit, assuming we hit one of the pillars? Well, anything could be, right? I mean, even under regular confines of the Income Tax Act, a Section 85 tax election confers a tax benefit. You are otherwise deferring taxation when you enter into a transaction to move assets within a corporate group. So,
but that's the design, right? That's in some cases, that's the design of the Income Tax Act. So, you wouldn't think they're looking to, take away from that opportunity to use those sections. But it definitely does seem like they're looking for more information.
And that's really what it is. Again, just because you have met one of these pillars, and just because you have entered into a, call it, restructuring tax plan that results in a tax benefit, doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with that planning or that arrangement. It simply means that you trip upon a reporting requirement, and it's then up to the Canada Revenue Agency to decide. I suspect what will happen here is that, finance through the CRA will obtain a multitude of reportable transactions. They will then judge what they think is valid versus other areas that they may want to challenge, depending on the volume of the types of transactions, and then it'll go from there. All right. Anytime there was something new, there was always worry. I remember back in the days when the Form T1134 came out for reporting transactions, reporting information on foreign affiliates, there was a similar discussion. Well, what does this all mean? What it means is that there's more information on the table for the Canada Revenue Agency to assess.
So they trigger a requirement to report information. It doesn't necessarily mean you've got a tax issue.
Correct.
Fair to say? Right. Yeah. What happens? I mean, obviously a lot of tax planning involves multiple transactions or a series of transactions, what happens in that case? Like, do they apply the rules on a transaction by transaction basis, or is it, you know, the whole arrangement?
So a series of transactions can certainly apply in these particular rules. So if you're trying to be cute about it and say, well, you know, there was multiple steps here and we believe we're exempt because the final step didn't qualify, that's not necessarily going to fly. All right. So you will have to be mindful of what could constitute a series of transactions that may have these, you know, rules apply. And at the end of the day, if there is doubt, right, given that, you know, there is certain teeth to this legislation, we'll get into that with respect to, you know, potential penalties, you'll have to judge which side of the line you'd want to be on. Do you want to be more conservative, report it, therefore you've, you know, provided your compliance with the legislation, or do you feel comfortable enough that you fell outside of the legislation and then otherwise are awaiting potential audits somewhere down the road to disagree with you?
And if you think you've got a reportable transaction, you know, what's the time limit for reporting that to the CRA?
So it's 90 days from the implementation date of the relevant transaction. Okay, so for reportable transactions, and eventually we'll get into notifiable as well, but it's the same. It's 90 days, you know, after the particular transaction was entered into. It has nothing to do with the filing of a tax return, a usual deadline, right? This has everything to do with when the transaction was put in place.
Okay, so in some cases, you'll have to notify the CRA before the end of your tax year.
Correct.
Okay. And is there a special form, or since it's not part of the tax filing?
Yeah, I think they were, at least at the time when the legislation had come out, they were still developing some of the forms for all these three. So I don't actually have a specific form number, but the CRA will be coming out with the actual reporting requirements. And to the extent that that form does not exist, a letter identifying the legislation and your, you know, criteria that you are now reporting would otherwise suffice. So in any of these cases, I would not be waiting for a form to report through. I would be complying with the legislation because, as you indicated, it did receive royal assent back in June.
Yeah, I mean, it's not uncommon for a tax rule to come in effect and the forms aren't quite ready or haven't quite been posted yet. But certainly we will have that information on our website as soon as it's available. And I guess it's one thing I found interesting that I want to ask you about is it looks to me like those requirements aren't just for the taxpayer. They could also apply to other parties. Is that true?
It can. So if you're a promoter or an advisor, there are already rules under the Income Tax Act that apply to promoters, especially promoters in tax shelters. Right. So yes, you across the board, you're going to have to consider whether or not the outreach of these rules apply beyond just the client, but to also the service provider. Okay. And there are separate penalties for that service provider as well if they fail to otherwise comply.
Okay, so I guess they're not too selective on where they get the information from. If you're involved in the transaction, you could be subject to these new mandatory disclosure requirements. That's important to know. You mentioned notifiable transaction. I wanted to ask you, you know, because reportable, notifiable, you know, to a non-income tax professional sounds very similar, almost interchangeable, but they're not actually interchangeable. Are they? What's the difference between a reportable and a notifiable transaction?
So basically, I'll take two primary differences. One, with notifiable transactions, the pillars we previously discussed do not apply in the sense that whether they exist or they don't exist is irrespective of a transaction being a notifiable transaction. The second difference is that with a notifiable transaction, the Canada Revenue Agency is specifically defining the transactions they want to know about. So in this particular case, it's situations where the CRA has seen a multitude of plans and that they don't necessarily like, right? So what are some of these areas? I won't go through all of them, but you know, it was common to manipulate the status of a CCPC, all right? And that was just for the advantage in terms of certain planning initiatives under the Income Tax Act. Well, the CRA wants to know that, right? There's always aspects of, you know, how to do formulate a proper tax plan. Normally within a CCPC environment that involved the use of trusts. And when the use of trusts that put, you know, certain transactions in regards to deemed disposition rules, 21-year deemed disposition rules for trusts, right? Well, the CRA wants to know, you know, whether or not there were transactions involved that are basically trying to get out of the 21-year deemed disposition rule. All right. So the CRA in this particular case has to specifically define the transactions, all right, that are notifiable. And I suspect what will happen over time is that transactions that first came to fruition because they were reportable transactions may later be defined as notifiable transactions as this process starts to go through the years. Because again, under a notifiable transaction, you're not necessarily on the wrong side of the tax law. It's notifiable, it's disclosed, and the Canada Revenue Agency, in advance of an audit, can consider whether or not, you know, these types of plans, these types of areas fit within the confines of the Act or do not. And if they do not, it doesn't necessarily mean that the taxpayer will face an assessment. It simply could mean that finance will change the Income Tax Act. They may just not like the way certain provisions are being interpreted and applied. They may not feel that they could win in a court of law on a plan in terms of nullifying it, and therefore they change the legislation. So this is no different in regards to what's happened in the past, except in the past, first it has to be detected, then it has to be challenged, and then subsequent to the courts making a decision, whether finance likes that decision or not, laws get changed. No different than here, except we're bringing to the forefront the disclosure either as a reportable transaction or a notifiable transaction.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point that it's not uncommon, right, for, you know, finance to lose a case and then potentially change the legislation, or maybe they were concerned they were going to lose a case, and so sometimes they'll change the rules. Important to watch out for that. Notifiable transactions then sounds like they're actually specifically listed, and then, of course, it would also include any transactions very similar to that. So a little minor change to a transaction, but it looks fairly similar to one of the ones that's listed. It won't really get you out of the requirement to report on it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And you mentioned earlier that the reporting deadline was essentially the same as
90 days
as for reportable transactions. Okay.
Correct. And that applies to the taxpayer, and it also applies to the promoter or slash advisor.
Okay. And I got to tell you, Clyde, I feel like I'm stuck in a rut. That is, I think my company might have a reportable uncertain tax treatment, RUTT. What is that? You know, it's a little unclear to me. What do they mean by uncertain tax treatment?
So when we move to the next category, so really what was new with respect to the legislation back in June, right, was really the aspect of uncertain tax positions. All right. So, you know, Bill C-47 dealt with notifiable and reportable, all which was on the table before. But it also added now uncertain. And with changes in financial reporting requirements, GAAP, you know, whether it be IFRS or US GAAP or whatever the case is, historically, you know, various changes with regards to income tax reporting included, for accounting purposes, the necessity to report uncertain tax positions. Now, the particular GAAP may define the criteria under which there has to be an accrual for accounting and or disclosure with respect to uncertain tax positions, but it was an accounting concept, not necessarily a tax concept. So from a Canadian perspective, Canada Revenue would come in to do an audit, and they would say, give me your financial information on that Canadian company, which obviously you're required to do under the Income Tax Act. But multitude of Canadian companies are subsidiaries of foreign companies. And those foreign companies might have uncertain tax positions reported on their books. But from a historical audit perspective, there was no obligation to have to provide any details, really, on the foreign parent. So that made it difficult for the Canada Revenue Agency to look through. Well, now these rules come into place, right? So now, if you are a subsidiary of a foreign company, if you exceed a certain threshold, in this case, $50 million of assets, and you're held, okay, by a group that's listed on a stock exchange that requires GAAP financial statements that include uncertain tax positions, and those tax uncertain tax positions relate to the Canadian subsidiary, now you need to disclose. All right. So whereas before, the CRA would ask for it, knowing that these accounting, you know, regulations internationally required it. However, they were never recorded on the Canadian books and records, which made it difficult to access. This now creates an environment where the UTP has to be disclosed.
Okay, that's very interesting. And how and when would these situations be reported?
So in this particular case, unlike the prior two, this is a disclosure with the annual corporate T2 tax return. So it's going to be the filing deadline of the particular return. It applies for transactions or for accounting transactions subsequent to the 2022 tax year. So you've got some time to consider. But now in undertaking the compliance on a T2 of a subsidiary of a, you know, ultimate parent group that is publicly listed, you'll have to consider whether or not these rules apply to you and whether or not at that ultimate parent level, in accounting uncertain tax position, is anything embodied for the Canadian subsidiary? And if the answer to that is yes, then there'll be a disclosure requirement on the Canadian return.
And those rules, you know, for reportable uncertain tax treatments, they come into effect for taxation years beginning after 2022, right? So
correct.
For this year, they're basically in effect.
Correct. Assuming you had a December 31st year end.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So these are new, but something to consider because the information will not necessarily be embodied on the Canadian financial reporting statement. It will be embodied at likely the parent level, right? With respect to the disclosure required under, let's say, IFRS or US GAAP, whatever the case may be, with regards to uncertain tax positions.
Very good. You mentioned earlier that, you know, the potential penalties for failing to follow these rules and report as required, that they had some teeth and they do look to be quite substantial. Can you maybe just review what those penalties might be?
Yeah, certainly. Right. So, you know, if we're looking at the situation of a reportable or notifiable transaction, then for the taxpayer, okay, the penalty can be $100,000. Or 25% of the benefit that you were seeking, whichever is greater, right? And in terms of the advisor or the promoter, you know, then you're looking at a minimum, right, of $10,000, right, plus the fees that you charged, you know, plus the potential of an additional amount up to $100,000, right? So that's for the reportable and notifiable. If it's an uncertain tax treatment and you haven't complied, then it's $2,000 per week and up to a maximum of $100,000. But that is on a per disclosure perspective. So if Canada had three potential uncertain tax positions that were otherwise disclosed in the public entity financial statements, then your penalty could be up to $300,000, right? Because there would be three items that you didn't disclose on. So yes, these penalties, you know, do have teeth, right? Exactly how will the Canada Revenue Agency, you know, apply these, right? Obviously, there is going to be, you know, less wiggle room when it comes to the uncertain tax positions, because if it's in the financial statement and relates to Canada, then it's there. All right. And if the CRA detects it, I suspect the penalty will be automatic. when it comes to the reportable or notifiable, I would suspect that the next would be on the notifiable, because those are specific. If you did something, let's say for the 21-year deemed disposition rule on trusts, you likely would be in. If you tried to get out and you didn't report it, you'd be subject to penalty. And the one that maybe will have the most wiggle room would be the reportable transactions, assuming you're going to be arguing that that somehow one of the pillars wasn't met, you know, or that you weren't really seeking a tax benefit at the end of the day. But in any case, I suspect we're going to be seeing these types of assessments in short course, because the Canada Revenue Agency will be wanting to make a statement that these types of disclosures are important, right? And not to think that taxpayers can escape scot-free by trying to take positions outside of a normal course in regards to application of these requirements.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like these penalties could really add up quickly if you've got a lot of them, a lot of these types of transactions going on. So definitely important to stay in line with the rules. And I think, isn't it also true that they can extend the reassessment period if the disclosure hasn't been made in the prescribed form? So in other words, if you haven't disclosed it and they don't find it until quite some time later, they could still hit you with the penalty.
That's true, right? So, and that's an important point, because some will play what's called the audit lottery. Well, fine, I won't report anything. I'll wait to see if the Canada Revenue Agency comes in, all right? If they don't, then I win. And if they do, well, maybe they
not always the best strategy, but yeah, you're right. Some will try. Yep.
Okay. But you know, where some are relying on that audit lottery to potentially have either this legislation or that particular matter statute barred, this extension will put a wrinkle into those type of plans.
Yeah. Listen, that's a lot of great information, Clyde. I know, you know, someone just listening might suddenly be concerned, you know, or have some questions about these mandatory disclosure requirements. Of course, if you're a Ryan client, you can always contact the Tax Direct line as a starting point at 1-800-667-1600 or taxdirect@ryan.com. But what if they'd like to contact you directly? What's the easiest way to reach you, Clyde?
Easiest way is probably by email, right? So that would be Clyde.Seymour, S-E-Y-M-O-U-R, @ryan.com.
Okay, that's great. And as I mentioned, we do have some more information already posted on the News and Insights section of our website at ryan.com/Canada. And we'll keep that up to date as new forms and more guidance is released by the Canada Revenue Agency. Whatever they've released to date is already there. Clyde, I want to thank you again for your time today and your great explanation about how these new rules work and what to watch out for.
Great. Thanks, Jim.
That's it for this episode of Ryan Talks Tax. Please let us know what you think about the podcast. You can send your questions, comments, or suggestions to events@ryan.com. Thanks for listening.